All right, joined by Jack Beckman, our Nitro Funny Car Champion here at the 49th running of the NHRA Gator Nationals. Jack has... Excuse me. The speaker's on the cut out there.
Jack has gas.
This is Jack's 27th career win. He's the number one qualifier at this event.
29th.
Okay, 29th career win for Jack, who's keeping very close track of those things. The interesting thing here for Jack, it's the first time in funny car history that the first three races have been won by a number one qualified car. Over the last couple of years, it's been kind of almost a kiss of death as far as wins qualifying number one. But this year, the first time in history, we've had all three number one qualifiers win their respective races. Jack's the 25th different winner here at the Gator Nationals. And... first ever, of course, final round here. So, Jack, I'll open it up with a simple question. This is a special weekend because of the fact that it's the Gator Nationals, but also because of the fact of the Drag Racing Hall of Fame induction. So you're surrounded by legends of the sport. So does it mean a little more to do it in front of this type of a crowd?
Yeah, without question. Of the trophies at home on my shelves, I don't look at anyone and go, well, that one doesn't mean much. I mean, they're all pretty badass. That U.S. Nationals one is... totally awesome. Like that 2015 weekend to double up tracks in the U.S. Nationals, that's a fairy tale weekend. But the Gator Nationals came on the schedule in 1970 when NHRA went from four races to seven. That really was that was the super season. You know, that's when they went to a pro tree. That's when pro stock became an eliminator category. It's the first year they crowned a funny car champion. 1970 was a big year for our sport, and it's been at this track ever since then, and I've never gotten close. It was such a bucket list thing. And then you always start this weekend with the Hall of Fame. I don't always get to fly out here that extra day early, but I had to do media for the race. Maybe a little karma building there, huh? So I flew in a day early, and then Thursday I went down to the Hall of Fame and got to actually induct Gary Densham. And then I got to induct Ollie Riley, the man who invented the Krondek timing system that was the first timing system at the 1955 Nationals. And then I got to present Johnny Gray, the Pat Garlitz Award for Terry Chandler, who's still on the side of our car and made all of this possible. All of this possible. There's 21 of us that have jobs today because of Terry Chandler and how big her heart is, and now her husband Doug wants to carry it on. And let me tell you, Doug's into hunting and airplanes, but he's getting texts every single round, and he is over the moon right now. He's loving it because now it's his funding that's going in these cars, but he's loving it because he knows Terry's looking down and saying, all right. My boys did it.
Talk a little bit about you were on the starting line when Matt Hagen and Robert Height had the double explosion run. Talk about the fact that you've been through that situation, not a double run like that, but you've had your fair share of those. And then what, if anything, you goes through your head, and then if anything, you talk to Hagen about after.
God, you're good, Brian. Brian Lowndes is amazing. Honestly, I really appreciate listening to you on the announcing and everything you do on the TV show. When you're strapped in the car, and I was the next pair in Pike's Lane, left lane, and they launch, and you can't see that much because their whole crew is standing behind their car, so you're just looking at bits and pieces, and then two of your crew members are standing there, so you're tilting your head, and then you're hitting the roll cage, and then I see stuff flying, and I got on the radio, I said, who blew up? And they said, both, and I thought I must have misunderstood. I said, no, whose body was that? They said, both. My next question was, can I get out now? Because you know it's going to be a long time. And damn if they don't make you wait 5 minutes. They say, okay, go ahead and get out. I know how long it takes to clean a car up. I've done that plenty of times. I think four wide a few years ago, Deal and Hagen blew up, but I've never seen every car on the racetrack shuck its body. And Hagen's Mopar, David, that was pretty good PR. That thing had to be 80 feet in the air. It was stunning. So first of all, the racer and me, you got to kind of come down off your mental level and go, okay, I can get out of the car. Then the fan in me is watching the replay, and it's like, oh my God. Then the racer in me tapped me on the shoulder and said, remember, dummy, you're going to get back in that car and go down the same track in 5 minutes. So you got to really get back into that mindset of, I got to go out there and turn on another wind light.
Did you talk to Matt after?
No, they were pretty. I got to tell you, I got a tremendous amount of respect for Dickie and that crew. They unloaded their backup chassis, not even take a bother, because a lot of times when these things blow up, the explosion tries to shove the engine through the ground, and the only thing that keeps it up is the front and rear tires, but it bends the frame rails. Like I said, I'm pretty much an expert on that now. Ask Richie, he's patched a lot of cars like that. So rather than take a chance on it, he says, just bring out the backup race car. That's where testing pays off. You check all your spare stuff, and they go out there and win the semifinals and put themselves in contention for the final. There wasn't time to talk to those guys. They were motivating to get that car back up for the semis.
Let's open up to questions.
We talked about track conditions a lot this weekend, and this morning when we showed up here, I thought about you and what you said.
Why, thank you.
I thought about what you said yesterday, and here it was. Weather conditions we hadn't seen all week.
Candyland first round.
Yeah. So, what's the thought process first off, and second of all, does that throw a curveball into the mix when coming up?
It can. I think that the situation is more what you make of it than the situation. You know what people say? This is a stress-filled situation. Well, it is if you make it a stress-filled situation. And then, boy, when I raced Super Comp for years, a guy would lose and run slow, and I go, well, what happened? Oh, the wind, man, it picked way up. I said, really, only in your lane then, huh? Didn't affect the other guy. So when you see it's overcast, you say, okay, it's a slightly different mindset. If it's overcast, the track's going to tend to be better. If the car shakes, you can usually slap it early and quick, and it'll recover. If it's nasty hot like it was the semifinals and the car goes out there and shakes, it's going to smoke right away. You better get off of it. Count to 150, which is about that fast to a driver, and roll back into it. So there's that preparation as a driver. But aside from that, that's for the crew chiefs to stress out over. They're chasing this moving target that's ridiculous to try to master. And that's why we have at least two per team. My job is just to go out there and try not to screw up their tune-up.
Did you feel pretty good coming in? And I would feel that you have to, that you made four solid passes?
Yeah, no, remember, Q3, we put a hole out of 274 feet. So even though we were fourth quickest that session, you never know. If it didn't drop the hole, it might have smoked the tires. You know, you're never going to say, let's make a tune-up where we go out 274 feet and drop a hole and then duplicate that one. So that one wasn't what we wanted it. And then Q4, we got bit. We thought the weather was doing this, and we were going to take a certain amount of time to run. I looked at that sheet for Q4. It was 26 minutes for the entire session of Funny Car. And we got caught unprepared. If we knew it was going to run that fast, we would have put more supercharger in it. So we had a weak tune-up there. But I think that we were confident with what we did Friday. And then like we talked about yesterday, we knew first round was going to be throw at it conditions. And then everything after that was going to be a question mark. It depended on what the clouds did.
That goes back to your thing with the data you got in Q4. So you made a full pass. It may not have been the number you wanted, but you had the data to go back and say, hey, okay, so we did make that pass. This is what we can do now.
Absolutely. You're spot on that one. And that's why going down the track is so, so important. If you can make it to 400 feet, you can tweak the thing to make it to the finish line. But when that car goes out there and smokes the tires at the step, you learn nothing. And we're getting better at running the lane and getting that car down the racetrack. And every time we do that, our war chest gets stronger because we've got more data to fall back on. And a lot of times you make a test run that doesn't seem to yield the results that you want, but man, Bristol later in the year, a night session, you say, wait a minute, what about T3 back in Vegas? Remember when and you go back and say, hey, we didn't know it was going to teach us something, but it was well worthwhile spending that extra day out there testing.
Thanks, Jay.
How do you mentally prepare yourself when you race a teammate? That must be hard.
Have you seen Matt Hagan, David?
Yeah,
it is not hard to get up for Matt Hagan.
Right.
Let me tell you, when I'm putting the 80-pound dumbbells up on Matt Hagan, because I know he can curl those sons of bitches. Yeah. You know, Caps always says it's easier for him to get up for his teammates because he thinks they're the three toughest cars out there.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of validity to that. There's a lot of depth of talent in Funny Car this year. But throughout the season, the Schumacher cars are going to be right there. So it's not like when you pull up next to Tommy Johnson, you go, yeah, they haven't been running that good. Or even if they haven't, you know what they're capable of. You know, they got the same machine shop parts, they got the same fabrication shop parts in their car, and the same level of talent over there. You know, that's one thing. Don ensures that all seven of his cars have all the best, so there are no excuses when you go up there. And then when he started selling our machine shop parts, and the crew chief said, wait a minute, we helped design a better part, now you're selling it. Don said, yep, and if they can beat us, with our parts, we don't have the right people here. We have to outthink them. So I think it's super easy to stay at that level against a Schumacher car.
Do the crew chiefs share data within the DSR camp? Do your crew chiefs share data?
It's an open door policy. What you'll find is a lot of crew chiefs have a different philosophy on how they tune the car. Some do it with timing, some do it with superchargers, some do it with nitro percentage. So what Kevin's doing might not necessarily work for what my wheelhouse is. Ron Tober will tend to do his own thing and take a combination and flog it for 3 years and just wear us out with what we thought was last year's technology. Dickey and is pretty aggressive. John Collins is somewhere in the middle there. With Guido and John and Neil, it's a little bit of a tug of war, but I think that what you can see on this is those three heads have moderated what would be the most aggressive tune-up and made it one of the most consistent tune-ups. But it's always an open-door policy. If we want to go in their lounge, if they want to flash drive a run and give it to us or vice versa, you can always do that. I think the unwritten rule is if we're going to run you next round, we're not going to share data this round. But honest to God, if Dickie came over, the guys would let him look at our computer.
Cool.
Talk to
me.
Didn't mean to supersede.
The deal with the, you know, with the, all these explosions, you know, and Force has eaten some parts this year. Now with the
some parts? Thing. Is that a euphemism?
Yes. That is. But in the end, the thing is, has there been a big technological change in the off season that might be causing some of this, and the clutch and the cam and something like that, where there's...
I can't speak to the technology over at JFR. The two big changes have been the header angle, which truly I don't think the header angle has done anything. They tilted us up some, but they also let us widen them to come back closer to point it up, not away from the car. I think that's almost a wash. What it has changed is the balance of the cars, but I'm not seeing wheel stands this year. So that's probably not an issue. The rev limiter coming in sooner is a big change, but that would only make a difference if it caused an issue after 700 feet down track. A lot of the big explosions you've seen are from dropped cylinders early in the run, and we're trying to leg it to the finish line. So I think that goes back to the old adage that the only way to make these cars run faster is to burn more fuel. And sometimes you can't burn all that fuel. You put a hole out, they get unhappy, and you see what the results are there. Now, I don't know what happened with Height and Hagen out there. I didn't get to see what was going on right before they blew up. And here's the thing, I think we get spoiled. It's like talking about track prep. That track prep has been so badass for 15 years that we bitch about it if your car spins the tires a half a turn. I did as a super comp racer, and it's only because the track prep is unbelievably good. So when these cars go out there and blow up, you go, why can't they fix these cars? Well, guys, they make 11,000 horsepower. They go 0 to 330 in 3.8 seconds. Wrap your head around those numbers and stuff's gonna happen sometimes. I have a suggestion to make nitro racing safer. It's a Lincoln welder, and you weld the trailer doors closed so you can't unload the cars. It'll be much safer.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, sir.
What's left on the bucket list now?
What's left on more wins? More.
Another championship.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what you always run for. Is that, but here's the thing is, it's not like the NFL season where you're...